hour. What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. British Prime Minister Theresa May Tuesday called an early election for June 8, a way she said to boost support in Parliament during negotiations to leave the European Union.
If we do not hold a general election now, their political game playing will continue, and the negotiations with the European Union will reach their most difficult stage in the run-up to the next scheduled election. Division in Westminster will risk our ability to make a success of Brexit, and it will cause damaging uncertainty and instability to the country.
Brexit Secretary David Davis said it will provide 5 years of stability.
And during which we'll have the Brexit negotiation and the period thereafter in which we can deliver on the other things the Prime Minister wants to deliver on. The Britain that works for all. All of those other issues of industrial strategy, of social policy, of welfare policy, of education policy, they're all a part of the package that Theresa May brings, and she wants the public at large to give her the mandate for it.
Opinion polls suggest her Conservative government, buoyed by a strong economy, is comfortably ahead of the opposition Labour Party. The news bolstered the British currency, the sterling, which rose to a four-month high, although that drove London stocks lower. A Zambian opposition leader arrested last week on Tuesday was charged in court with trying to overthrow the government. Hakainde Hichilema and the United Party for National Development narrowly lost last August's election to the ruling Patriotic Front. Hichilema claimed he was assaulted by police during his arrest at home. His arrest has been strongly condemned by civil groups and political commentators who warn it will fuel tensions across the country. This is VOA News. Turkey's political opposition has begun the process of trying to annul Sunday's constitutional referendum, giving President Recep Tayyip Erdogan sweeping new powers. The Council of Europe's observer mission said up to 2.5 million ballots could have been tainted in the narrow 51% victory. A member of the opposition Republican People's Party, Derya Talay, said it's an attempt to try all options, even in a country, she said, where there is no justice. Turkey's prime minister has called on the opposition to respect the results. The opposition is alarmed by an electoral board's decision to accept ballots that did not bear official stamps, verifying they were genuine. Voters are casting ballots for governor of Jakarta, Indonesia's largest city, a choice between an incumbent ethnic Chinese Christian currently facing blasphemy charges in court and a Muslim challenger. The vote is seen as a test of the country's democracy and religious tolerance. Peter McCauley is an Indonesian analyst at the Australian National University.
Indonesia as a whole is a nation of 260 million people. It's a very widespread nation, so we should not focus too much on just the capital alone. But nevertheless, it is true that it is a touchstone, it is a guide to the direction of politics in Indonesia, and therefore it is an important election and certainly worth watching. There's no question about that.
Pre-election surveys suggest a tight contest between incumbent Basuki Jaja Purnama and former education minister Anies Baswedan. In Egypt, gunmen attacked security forces near a Christian monastery in southern Sinai, killing one officer, wounding several others. Islamic State claimed responsibility. The attack comes less than 2 weeks after suicide bombers killed more than 40 Coptic Christian worshippers at two churches. A suspect identified as Corey Ali Mohammed, an African-American, Tuesday shot and killed three white men at random in Fresno, California, after shouting "God is great" in Arabic. He is in police custody. Part of the investigation, Police Chief Jerry Dyer said, were officers checking the suspect's Facebook page.
We know that he has some posts that says that he does not like white people, and also on that post that he has expressed some anti-government sentiments.
Mohammed also was wanted in the shooting death last week of a motel security guard. Nigeria Tuesday reopened the airport in the capital Abuja, a major business hub, after it was closed for 6 weeks for runway repairs. The shutdown disrupted international travel. Two men have been arrested in Marseille, accused of planning an imminent and violent attack ahead of Sunday's French first-round presidential election. A Paris prosecutor said weapons, explosives, and videos, as well as jihadist propaganda, were seized in their rented flat. The opposition in Venezuela is promising the mother of all mass demonstrations across the country Wednesday, the latest sign of discontent of the government of President Nicolas Maduro. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zambian opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema, in jail on treason charges, says police assaulted him during his arrest.
Any assault is not an allegation that is coming from us today. We are referring to an incident that happened last week when they attacked his house and tried to arrest him.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for Zambia's main opposition UPND party. Kenya's main opposition coalition elections are halted amid confusion and accusations. We'll talk about humanitarian conditions in the Difa region of Niger, and that Liberia's Senator Prince Johnson denies concluding a political coalition with businessman Benoni Ure for the 2017 elections.
I know that I invited Tony Paris to Ganta, we came there. He was one of those who attended the meeting, and we came up with a Ganta declaration to work together. But we have not sat down to decide the way forward as far as working together is concerned.
That's Liberian Senator Prince White Johnson. African countries should not depend heavily on oil production to finance their development. And the World Health Organization reports progress against neglected tropical diseases. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zambian opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema, jailed on treason charges, will appear in court again today, Wednesday. Mr. Hichilema of the United Party for National Development, UPND, was arrested last Tuesday and charged with treason for allegedly failing to yield to a presidential motorcade. Other charges include disobeying police orders and insulting a police officer. Mr. Hichilema appeared in court on Tuesday and told the judge that he was attacked by police during his arrest. Zambian Inspector General of Police Joshua Kaganja had no comment when contacted. UPND spokesman Charles Kakoma says police attacked Mr. Hichilema's house without a search warrant and looted his property, including even his children's toys.
What happened was that the police attacked his house last week. They went without a search warrant, broke his gate, entered his premises, broke the doors and windows, and tear gassed all the rooms in the house, and looted his house. They took a lot of things from the house, including clothes, the cash, and whatever they could lay their hands on, including toys for his children. And after that, he was later arrested on a charge of treason.
Mr. Kakoma, first of all, let me say we made attempts to speak to the police inspector general. We were not successful. First of all, Mr. Hichilema was arrested almost a week ago. Why now is the party saying that he was assaulted?
Well, what we are saying now is what I've described. Any assault is not an allegation that is coming from us today. We are referring to an incident that happened last week when they attacked his house and tried to arrest him. That is the incident we are referring to.
So, Mr. Hichilema appeared in court on Tuesday. What happened in court?
What happened in court is that they read three charges against him. The first one was that he committed treason. And the second charge was that he disobeyed orders from an inspector of police. And the third one was that he insulted some policemen. But all those matters attracted preliminary issues from his lawyers, who think that those charges are defective.
When is the next court appearance for Mr. Hichilema?
Mr. Hichilema is appearing in court again this morning at 09 hours Zambian time.
A day or two ago, I spoke with presidential spokesman Amos Chanda. He brought up the issue of the arrest of Mr. Hichilema, whether that was causing instability in the country. And he said, well, the fact that Mr. Hichilema refused to give way to the presidential motorcade, that indicates that he is the one that is causing instability.
Well, they are just twisting facts. The facts of the matter are that before Mr. Hichilema started off to go on that public road, he was given clearance by a commissioner of police that he can start off and go to a traditional ceremony that was taking place in the western part of Zambia. which President Edgar Lungu, the Republican president, was also attending. And the way things happen in Zambia, that when the Republican president is using a certain route, the police clear the road so that nobody else is using that road except the Republican president. But on that day, the police did not clear that road. It was open to members of the public, and it was not only Hakainde Hichilema who was using that road. Other members of the public were also using that road, apart from Mr. Hichilema's. But the police decided to target Mr. Hichilema's vehicle and tried to push it out of the road. Clearly, from the video footages that we are seeing, and according to Amos Chanda, they decided to overtake the motorcade for Hakainde Hichilema. Hakainde Hichilema was not blocking the road. And therefore, the President Lungu decided to overtake, and his motorcade decided to overtake Hakainde Hichilema. During that process of overtaking, according to the videos we are seeing, the President of the Republic even opened his window to look at Hichilema or to wave at him. And that, therefore, there was no security risk posed at that stage. So the issue is that Mr. Hichilema did not block the Republican president, did not try to interfere with his motorcade because the road was cleared for public use by the police.
Mr. Kakuma, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure, and thank you for keeping us informed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for Zambia's main opposition, UPND party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. Kenya's top opposition coalition is wrapping up primary voting this week ahead of August general elections as the ruling Jubilee coalition gears up to start its primaries on Friday. As Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi, the voting is seen as a key test of cohesion for both coalitions.
Confusion and accusations abound in Nakuru County after the names of some opposition Orange Democratic Movement Party candidates were missing from paper ballots. ODM party election officials called off the vote and rescheduled it. Some results were cancelled because of allegations of rigging, and some constituency elections were postponed because of logistical issues. The party has held elections in at least 10 counties. Robert Arunga is a party election board member.
The exercise is very big, and therefore in an exercise like this, there will be mistakes here and there. But they are being corrected as they occur.
Some observers have praised the party for giving competitors an equal chance to participate, unlike previous times where some members were favoured in the primaries. Political commentator Martin Andati says the opposition party is not following electoral laws, hence the confusion.
They are not using the party register, which is a total contravention of the Elections and the Political Parties Act. And people will end up in court and they'll challenge the outcome of those nominations. You've seen the mess in Busia. You saw the disaster in Machakos and the chaos in parts of Kakamega.
The winners of ODM primaries will face members of other political parties for various seats on August 8th. Professor Herman Manyora is a political analyst and lecturer at the University of Nairobi. He says the failure to conduct a free and fair election at the party level sets a dangerous precedent.
There's a certain way in which democracy works. And in elective democracy, there will be winners and losers. And so long as there's fair play, both will accept. When we do that in political parties, we are then preparing ourselves for the general election. And that because there will be a winner during the general election, and there will be a loser. And if the elections are fair, Kenya must continue. But if we are perpetuating this idea that elections cannot be fair at any one time, then it is dangerous for the country.
The ODM party plans to end its primaries in about a week for 30 counties. Unlike the opposition, the ruling Jubilee party is planning its primaries across the country on Friday. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Today is Wednesday, April 19th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington, and Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. Liberian Senator Prince Wyatt Johnson is denying he has agreed to a political merger with businessman Benoni Ure for the 2017 presidential election. He has also denied being paid hundreds of thousands of dollars by Mr. Ure for the alleged merger.
Johnson, who calls himself a kingmaker from Liberia's second most populous county of Nimba, has been trying to bring political parties together to challenge the ruling Unity Party. He says he has been studying the individual party platforms to see which one would satisfy his political desire to decentralize the Liberian government. Johnson says Liberia currently has an imperial presidency and he wants to give power to the local people to elect their own leaders instead of the president appointing local officials.
I know that I invited Tony Parris to Ganta to keep there. He was one of those who attended the meeting and we came up with a Ganta declaration to work together. But no one party can win any election here. But we are not far down to decide the way forward as far as working together is concerned. Thoughts are being carried up discussions, but no conclusion as yet. So when I heard on a radio today in Mongolia that we have agreed to work together, and I went on the internet, I saw what they put on the Facebook, I get laughed. Liberians are looking for something to talk about, so they don't have anything.
Well, you have in the past called yourself a kingmaker. Perhaps that's why every candidate is trying to get your support. Yourself, are you a candidate in this current election?
I am a strong candidate, a formidable candidate, and I'm going to work along with a senator who will be my running mate, and we'll work together and lead this country over with him. What I've been doing is not to look at the individual. I've been looking at the platform of those individual parties. Any party that will have a platform that will seek to politically decentralize governments in this country to reduce the power of the president, meaning the power the president has to appoint local government officials, should be the people prerogative in those countries to elect who will serve them, and not to have an imperial president sitting in the mansion, appointing superintendent, commissioner, city mayor, and all of those things. I've been checking the platform of other people. I'm not saying it. They are interested in carrying out that same old central system of imperial president who appoints to all the countries. I mean, we live in the 21st century, and they shouldn't be. So I saw the platform is not correct. I cannot let the Bronski. But we are not supposed to make anything. We didn't discuss anything. Up till now, I speak to you. I have not sat with Mr. Jure. And I want to say, let us sign this document. No. That's far from the truth.
So what do you say to those Liberians who are suggesting that perhaps you got paid by Mr. Yure to come on his side?
No, Yure cannot pay me. Let me tell you, James Body and all those listening to me right now. 1990, when the president called me, I met with him and he said $8.7 million United dollars is in the central bank. Let us share the money. We buy arms, so we control the people. Then we order arms and we fight Taylor and Ekobo. And I said, but where's the governor? He showed me the governor's house. I told David Binton, the governor, and Tarant Tiki, the deputy governor, to my base. I protected them, and the central bank was well protected. $8.7 million. We turned everything over to Mr. Sawyer, and he came. That's why he told David Binton back to the bank. So if I didn't steal people's money, doing a state of anarchy, nobody can buy me here. Nobody can buy me. So then I said, cannot buy me. Nobody can buy me. I'm very principled. In the first place, Jimmy, I'm always preaching indigenous majority rule because for the past century, our minority brethren have been in power. And it's time now that the political compromise for an indigenous country to lead and let them find themselves under us as a vast government. They don't want to do that. They want us to be under them. For what? So if I preach it for 4 years, I continue to create the awareness that I found myself under anybody for the minority group as a vast running mate that I defeated myself, my principal. And I will look like nothing in the other people in this country.
Senator, what do you make of what's happening now with the National Elections Commission chair, Mr. Kokoya? There are suggestions that Mr. Kokoya holds a United States passport. Do you think that that should disqualify him?
We do not have dual citizenship here. So if it is proven that you have an American passport, then you should step down.
Senator Johnson, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, and thank you for speaking to us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you, James, and God bless you.
Liberian Senator Prince White Johnson was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The Boko Haram insurgency may have started in northeast Nigeria in 2009, but the devastating effects spread to neighboring countries. One of the places hit hard by attacks, displacement, and an influx of refugees is the Diffa region in southwestern Niger. VOA's Nicholas Pinot is in Diffa and spoke to Jody Kapua about current humanitarian conditions there.
The situation has improved a lot. You know, I was in Diffa 2016, and a year after, you can tell that the security has improved, especially because of the international task force targeting Boko Haram members on both sides of the border, both Niger and Nigeria, but also along Lake Chad. And so obviously the security is way better. You still have some attacks from time to time, but overall the general security has improved a lot. And so what you see right now, some refugees, I mean, it's still a tiny fraction of the population, but some refugees trying to go back to Nigeria because the situation has improved. You have about 250,000 refugees and IDP here in the Diffa region. Most of them, you know, they live in camps around Diffa and in Boso, for example, and along the border with Nigeria. And all of them, they saying they would like to go back, but right now they're not sure if it's secure in their villages to go back. They're waiting. They say they lack food. You know, international organization, they provide some food assistance. But for the refugees, it's not enough. Many people that I talk to say they are very hungry. They would like some food, especially for the kids. You don't have starvation in this part of Niger. You have some cases of malnutrition, but it's not as serious and severe as it would be, for example, in northern Nigeria.
Have you talked to any UN officials or humanitarian agencies about the humanitarian situation?
Yes, I met with a representative of UNHCR here in Diffa, and he explained to me that right now they covered 90% of the food assistance here in Diffa, which is about 8,000 tons. But overall, the situation is pretty good. That's what he was saying. And now they need to think about the long term, and especially how the refugees are going to go back. Because obviously it was a temporary situation since the first attack in Niger on February 2015. And right now many, many communities, you know, have been hit pretty hard by the attacks, and some villages have been destroyed. And right now the UNHCR representative in Diffa was saying that we need to talk about reconstruction, because obviously the refugees, even the IDP in the region, they need to go back in the villages.
What is the security situation like now in Diffa?
As I said, here in Diffa, you have the regional task force, which is mainly the army of Niger, Chad, Nigeria, and you have also people from Cameroon and Benin. You know, they cooperating to fight Boko Haram members all across Lac Chad region. You have the headquarters in N'Djamena, and you have here in Diffa main operation. You have American soldiers too. Officially, they only provide training and intelligence. The same for the French army. You can hear when you travel here and when you live here in Diffa, you can hear the Sukhoi airplanes, air attack airplanes. The Niger army has only two Sukhois, but you can hear them like mostly in the morning, because they are targeting some bases in the Lac Chad region, Boko Haram.
That's VOA's Nicolas Pinot in Diffa, Niger. He spoke to Jody Kapua. A former OPEC president says countries should not rely heavily on oil production to fund their national budgets and development projects. Dr. Chaki Khalil, who's also Algeria's former energy minister, says oil prices are too volatile. For example, low prices helped push Nigeria into a recession last year. Khalil spoke to viewers Mohamed El-Shinawi about the need for oil-producing countries to diversify their economies.
Well, I recommend that all countries that are oil-dependent get out of their oil dependence, because sooner or later they will have to do it. But if they do it later, it will be at a greater cost socially and politically. So as long as they have the foreign currency reserves and they have the time, you know, to diversify their economy from oil dependence to, for example, diversify to be more dependent on agriculture, on industry, on fishing, on tourism and services, it would be better in the long term. But this requires a program to carry out, you know, to be successful in getting out of oil dependence.
Libya was generating a decent amount of income from oil before the civil war, but it did not develop the society. Now its oil revenues are threatened by the ongoing civil war. What kind of economic future does Libya have if a peaceful solution is reached?
Well, I think Libya still has big oil reserves. They used to produce 1.5 million barrels per day. Now they're producing only 400 or 600,000 barrels per day. So if the situation stabilizes, then they're going to have still possibilities to increase their production to at least 1.5 million barrels per day. And this will provide them the income to rebuild, you know, the infrastructure, you know, the schools, universities, and water distribution system.
But Libya has very small population. Would Libya need in the future to diversify its resources and stop depending and reliance on oil also?
Yes, it is very important that countries, you know, even if they have a small population, diversify their economy, because their oil is not staying in the country forever. So sooner or later, they will have to prepare a plan to diversify the economy so that it would help them have a sustainable development in the long term, taking into account the increase in population, the increase of quality of living of the population. They're going to need good education, improve the education, improve the infrastructure, and develop resources that will allow them to avoid depending on oil in the long term.
That's former OPEC President Shakib Kalio speaking with viewers Mohamed El-Shenawi. The World Health Organization says remarkable progress is being made in tackling many of the world's most disfiguring and disabling neglected tropical diseases. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, where the WHO report assessing these achievements is being launched at a one-day meeting on neglected tropical diseases.
About 1.5 billion people in 149 countries are affected by neglected tropical diseases, a group of 18 debilitating conditions that disproportionately affect the very poor. The World Health Organization reports an estimated 1 billion people received treatment for one or more NTDs in 2015, bringing ancient scourges such as sleeping sickness and elephantiasis to heal. The director of the WHO's Department of Control of Neglected Tropical Diseases, Dirk Engel, cites several remarkable achievements. For example, he notes visceral leishmaniasis, a disfiguring disease that attacks the internal organs, has been eliminated in Nepal and is close to elimination in sub-districts in India and Bangladesh. While Asia has the largest number of NTD cases, Africa is the continent with the highest concentration of these diseases. Engel tells VOA up to 1.5 billion people in sub-Saharan Africa are infected by at least one tropical disease, but usually several at the same time. He says Africa is making progress in controlling a number of NTDs, including African sleeping sickness, onchocerciasis or river blindness, guinea worm, and lymphatic filariasis, an infection transmitted by mosquitoes which causes enlargement of limbs and genitals.
Some countries are lagging a bit behind. Some countries are actually doing very well. We have just acknowledged the first African country that has eliminated lymphatic filariasis as a public health problem, Togo.
Health ministers, representatives from pharmaceutical companies, academics, and donors attending the WHO meeting aim to explore ways to better control and eliminate some of the 10 most common NTDs by 2020. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's it for this Wednesday, April 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kHz and 15580 kHz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.